5
4
3 2
1
Yes, hello and welcome. This is Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Geeks are welcome. If you just want to come in for a quick browse around, see what's going on, you're more than welcome. I'm Stephen Scott. I'm your host this hour. And with me, my guests will be discussing a whole range of topics from Apple's WWDC conference. Yes, this week we are unapologetically Apple. And that is because of that conference, the Worldwide Developers Conference taking place. Lots of software announcements, as you would expect from this kind of conference, but also some new hardware to talk about as well. Oh, we are excited. With me, we have an international panel with us this week, actually. Sean Priest is in Manchester in the UK. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Stephen Scott.
And with us, we have Julie Rodaway in Liverpool in the UK.
Hello, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And we go completely international. Yes, we go to the United States of America to meet a man who can only be described as someone who is rather sinister and suspicious. It's Kayaker.
Hello, Stephen. Thanks for those Jaffa cakes.
Yeah, he does love a biscuit, does our Kayaker. Yes, I've got a bone to pick with you about that. We'll talk more about that later. Anyway, yes, also in America, we have Hugo with us as well. Hi, Hugo.
Thank you for having me, Stephen.
You're very welcome. And yes, we're going to be talking lots about Apple's WWDC and all of its announcements. Will we be selling our Sonos speakers so we can get an Apple HomePod? Or will we be getting a new phone contract so that we can get a new iPad Pro 10.5 inch? All that coming up on this week's Tech Talk. So yes, here we are again talking about technology, which is what we do best here on Tech Talk. Good to have your company. Thank you for joining me. Yes, we are here with our guests this week and we're talking about Apple's WWDC. I should just make it clear for those who are thinking, well, why are we making such a big deal out of this? What is the big deal? Well, it is essentially a developers conference, an opportunity for the guys to make the apps and the games that we all have come to love and use every single day in our lives. It's those guys that are really in the room. And that is what the purpose of Apple's WWDC is. But there were some hardware announcements, and that's something that is rather unusual at this kind of event. Generally, it's just software. This time around, we heard a lot about new hardware. And we're going to talk about that this hour. But before we get into all of that, I think our guests, you know, it'd be nice to hear from you about what you thought of WWDC this year, because, you know, let's be honest about it. It is a major event. It happens every year. We lead up to it with so much speculation and rumour, and finally we're at a point where we can talk about what's actually happened. Kayaker, I'm going to come to you first, because I think it's fair to say that you're quite negative about these events generally.
Well, I'm not negative to the WWDC as a whole, but the keynotes are often more marketing than interest to me. But a few things did come out of this conference that was developer-centric and not the marketing, and that was some of the new kit. So I'm very excited about the VR kit and the AR kit, which will allow developers to build some pretty cool tools with augmented reality and artificial intelligence. And why do I think that's important? Because you're going to be able to have your phone or your iPad tell you where that door is, where that pillar is, where the table is, where the wall is, where that nasty pothole in the sidewalk is. So I think there's some potential there.
That's the interesting thing, isn't it? I always ask myself, you know, what is it about VR, virtual reality and augmented reality that is going to be so good for us as blind or partially sighted people? That's a really interesting one. I didn't expect you to bring that up, Kayaker. Hugo, what was the standout for you this year?
Well, we had heard a lot of the rumors already about new Max, and we had heard about the Siri speaker and the Siri being able to use more third-party apps, more integration. So that's definitely what I wanted. But this HomePod was what interested me most.
Yeah, the HomePod. What a name. I don't know what I think about that. This is the Amazon Echo Google Home competitor. It's a Siri speaker. It's coming out in December. We'll talk more about that later. That was one of the standout announcements, definitely, at WWDC this year. Okay, Julie and Sean, let me come to you guys and see what you think. Julie, I'll come to you first. What did you think of the event?
Parts of it I found very visual, very boring. Very, very long about the Macs, the iMacs, which don't interest me at all. but I was fascinated to hear about the HomePod. Fascinated to hear about the new design for the App Store, but wondered where the search button is, because there was no mention of any search facility, and I use that all the time. Very interested to hear about iOS 11. It sounds as though it's going to be a complete makeover by all accounts, so very interesting.
Okay. Right, Sean, what did you think?
Oh, I don't know where to start. I mean, WWDC is amazing, always amazing. Look, people always get their expectations all sky high for this, and it is, like you've said, a developers conference. And there was so much packed into this one. Was it amazing? I'm sort of torn, you know. It was slightly boring, I will admit. I did put my pizza down for a second and walk away, but... overall, you know, like Kayaka said, there was some really interesting what developers can do with some of this stuff, AR and some of the APIs that were made available. The hardware was all predicted in the rumors anyway, so that wasn't particularly exciting for me. I was a little disappointed with iOS 11, but, you know, again, we'll get into this a bit later on. But overall, it was what I expected from a WWDC, but this was jam-packed.
Yeah, it certainly was jam-packed. It was full-on, actually. 2.5 hours we all sat there watching it, and it was good. I mean, it had its good points. It certainly had its dull moments, that's for sure. Software, of course, was the key. That was the main thing. You know, hardware, as I said earlier, is pretty much secondary when it comes to these events. But with this one, we did see some updates coming. We're going to see, for example, a new iOS 11, new operating system for iPhones and iPads. Guys, I'm going to throw it to you to kick things off on this. What did you think about iOS 11's update?
Well, I was disappointed, to be honest with you. And I'm still slightly confused, as I am from every WWDC. Now, when they were showing off the iPad... They made a big deal of a new app called Files. Now, as everyone knows, I've been going on about a file system in iOS for so long. This is a very basic sort of version, but it was there. But I'm slightly confused. Is that iPad only? Is that going to be available on the iPhone or not? But the thing, there was a theme going through all the software and sort of the hardware as well, and that was Siri improvements, the AI they're working on. So... I mean, we always love the voices. Anything to do with speech synths, we usually love. And they did say they've made improvements to the Siri speech. I wonder if that goes to any further, you know, if that expression goes on to voiceover speech synths as well. I don't know. But the thing that I really liked, actually, is going to probably be really useful, is the Apple Pay person-to-person. So to be able to send people payments through iMessages using Apple Pay actually would be really handy.
They went on about the control center. That's going to be redesigned. But in order to open the features more, they were talking about Touch ID to open the control center features. Now, if you don't use Touch ID, or you don't have a phone with Touch ID, I wonder whether that's going to restrict access to the control center or not.
I would assume that if you haven't got Touch ID, you're not going to be able to get iOS 11 by now. I don't think you'll be stuck on either iOS 9 or 10.
Well, do you mean Touch ID or do you mean the pressure sensitive touch?
The pressure sensitive touch feedback, yeah. Where you've got to have that to access the control centers more at length.
Yeah, I was wondering that as well, because they sort of said that there were a lot of features that were hidden underneath the speaker selection box, where it would pop up more options and give you more great deal with the force touch, I think they're calling it. And that's something that they've been pretty good at implementing accessibility-wise, and they still have the SE, which, as far as I know, doesn't have the force touch. So there's got to be a way around that.
It doesn't.
Yeah, because I have the SE, so I was wondering how I'd get around that.
Okay. Hugo, what's your thoughts on iOS 11?
I was just wanted to say something about the file system real quick, because I've been a jailbreaker in the past and I had access to every file. I know that's not exactly how that's going to be, but I'm wondering, is it just going to be photos, attachments, documents? Certainly not music, I would imagine, but I definitely like the idea that they're adding some kind of file system finally.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Definitely.
I've got to say, though, guys, I was watching the conference, and at times I thought I was feeling a bit silly, because, you know, I was thinking to myself about the different features that are already in the iPad and iPhone and in the current iOS, and I'm thinking, doesn't the iPad already do half of this stuff? You know, I mean, like iCloud Drive, for example. iCloud Drive really is files. I mean, am I being really stupid here? But is that not what iCloud Drive is?
Well, I'm thinking because when they were showing it on the iPad, when he hit recent, it showed him files that he had on iCloud Drive. I think he mentioned Dropbox, and it sounded like in that view, you could see files that were, you know, you could have access to files that were not in just iCloud Drive, like they probably normally would. You know, you would have to go to this individual apps to have access to Dropbox, or you have to go to OneDrive or iCloud Drive. Sounds like this app just puts them all in one screen.
Yeah, I think it's a unification. And for example, if you have an iRecorder app or something like that where you're doing the recordings and you're trying to get it to your computer, it seems like you can easily go to the Files app and drag your recordings directly to your Dropbox folder or your iCloud directory. So it's a sort of a unification of how to get stuff out of the actual app where you've made the content and get it to computers or, you know, your shared folders up on the cloud.
I think they also mentioned something about redesign of the text messaging app as well. Syncing more with the iCloud, that was particularly mentioned.
I know, that is a good feature. I like that one because one of the problems with iMessage at the moment is that when you delete a message from one device, it stays on the other. So if you've got a message in your iPhone and it pops up on your iPad, it stays there even if you delete it from the iPhone. It's quite ridiculous. And actually, do you know, I find that quite worrying, to be honest.
You're so secretive, Stephen.
It's not about being secretive. It's just that I want rid of those texts. I don't want them hanging around on my devices to be found at a later date.
That's one of those things where I did think, like you said, Stephen, I thought that was already the case.
No. No, it definitely is not. I can categorically guarantee.
You've tried.
Yes, I've tried to get rid of these messages. They will not go away.
I thought, I'm with Sean, I thought that was already possible. But then again, I have an iPad and my phone, but I don't use them the same way. I use my phone for pretty much everything. The iPad is more of a consumption device for me, like Netflix and media. So I don't send messages. So I'll look into it. But I already thought that this was already implemented.
Mm. It's just one of those features, you know, that you think, oh, that was already there. But no, not in that case. One thing I did think that was already there, they did talk about this, was the feature that when you sign into iMessage on a new device, that all your messages would download and everything would go into sync. Again, I thought that was something that it did. I mean, I'm sure the last time I signed up to iMessage on my iPad, that it all worked. Maybe it was just a fluke. I don't know. But it worked, I thought.
I don't know. I mean, overall, I was slightly... I did want more, but I'm always end up wanting more from the WWDC. But with iOS 11, we'll have to wait and see until the beta comes out next month. But yeah, I was expecting a little bit more. We'll have to see how integrated that file system is. That will be interesting.
It will. A lot of the conference for me was lost because a lot of it was very visual. So I probably missed a lot. And it annoys me, you know, when they say, well, I'd like to play this video, and then you get music and you don't know what they're showing. It really does annoy me.
Yeah.
There's no audio description.
No, there is not. You know, I've got to say, I was watching it. Well, I say watching. I was listening to it on my iPhone. Who can see that? But, you know, I was trying to see it, kind of hoping that all of us could perhaps get together and between us have a pair of working eyes that we could figure it out. But sadly not, no. However, one thing that did come out of it for me was that iOS really is about, you know, evolution rather than revolution these days. So on that point, I think, Sean, you've been a bit harsh about what it is you want. I mean, what more is it you want? I know that you've used WWDC as an excuse somehow to get a pizza into your house. Is that a good excuse?
It is. Is it? That's always an excuse.
Oh, right, okay. But what is it you want from iOS?
Look, when they opened up, look, this is iOS 11, and the first thing they mention is iMessage, stickers, and the app drawer. I get worried. Later on, I thought there was some really interesting stuff that we'll get to, but the things they brought out, the photos, the maps, you know, it's stuff that's, I'm just not, it's not the core of iOS for me. I want more. I want more, Stephen.
Well, you're not getting any more.
Sorry.
I don't care about these stickers. I mean, it means nothing to me. Nothing at all.
Yeah, you know, I get that. I do.
I think the feature that Apple should have added is being able to record phone calls.
Ooh.
Yeah, that would have been a good one.
Yeah, but let's be honest about it, Hugo. You know, they're not going to let us do that. I mean, you know, this is an organization that prides itself on privacy and, you know, all of that. You can't imagine us allowing turning your iPhones into NSA servers.
Well, you're probably right, since they were very big on privacy, but... See, that would be a feature everybody would like, I bet you.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, but it's all to do with privacy laws.
Yeah, it is. Okay, well, that's iOS 11. You know, I think we can argue the toss about the features, but, you know, one of the things that gets me is that whenever there are major updates, oftentimes they forget about the accessibility. It's kind of forgotten about, you know, the functions.
It always is.
Yeah, you know, it's the last thing on their list when it comes to being fixed and being ready. So when the update comes, you know, it breaks something, and that's always a big fear of mine before I upgrade. I don't know about you guys, but that's certainly how I feel about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, let's take, for example, the App Store, the new App Store that's coming out. One of the functions of it is to make apps more accessible to see, you know, sort of like what's available today. And, you know, last week's favourite app and all that. But there's no mention of a search bar.
No, none at all.
No search bar at all. I mean, what's that about?
It's not so much that there was no mention of it. It's just the search in the App Store is terrible. It's been terrible for years. Trying to find an app is horrendous in the App Store. So they made a big deal about the different tabs, about the new games only, the apps only, today only tab. But they didn't mention any work on search. And search is the thing that people want fix the most.
Yeah, because you don't want to trawl all the way through, you know, app just to find an app when you know exactly what you want. You don't want to trawl through games and today, and you just want to go to search and that's it.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, and it's just the search results are just so bad.
I was looking for an app the other day, typing in the search bar in the App Store, and I knew exactly what the app of the name was, and it still gave me, you know, four or five different things that were totally unrelated that I thought I wanted up front before I got to the app that I was looking for. So it definitely needs some work.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I tried to get the WWDC app so that I could watch the stream or listen to the stream on the iPhone. And, you know, I ended up getting the blooming Apple Store app, which was crazy. I didn't want that. So I ended up with this Apple Store app instead when I was trying to get to WWDC, which is nonsense. You know, this is the fear I've got that, you know, accessibility falls by the wayside whenever these new things are developed. I'm not saying that they won't be fixed in time, but from the very outset, from the point you do the upgrade, do you get, you know, an accessible app or whatever? I mean, you know, this is my concern. I mean, do you tell me what you guys think? Do you think that since we've had Global Accessibility Awareness Day and so much talk around disability and diversity using technology, that actually this isn't something we should be concerned about in the future? Or are you guys a bit more cynical on the topic?
I'm very cynical, really cynical, because they always break something.
I'm a little less cynical with the iOS updates. I think it's become a lot more stable. In the early days, it was horrible, 3 to 4, 4 to 5, but 7, 8, 9, 10 have been relatively calm to me as far as breaking of apps on the upgrade. There's usually a couple things, but they often fix an equal amount of things that they break. So it's been pretty okay of late. I hope that trend continues.
Hugo?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, most of the stuff in the, you know, well, it's like everything. Whenever they do a brand new update, you know, they're focusing on fixing things. So we, you know, there may be a broken app store, but once they get, you know, feedback, and of course, yeah, we have to wait a little longer, but they do get to us eventually. That sounds terrible, doesn't it?
Well,
I don't think so. I think accessibility is there. Obviously, it's not always a priority.
Yeah, but it should be. I mean, we should be annoyed about this, should we not?
Probably, but I agree with Kayaker. You know, back then, we used to be afraid of doing the updates. Now I just do them, and usually there's minor things that are broken when we do updates like this.
Yeah, minor things. Yeah, but you know, there shouldn't be any things that are broken. That's the point. You know, it's all very well sticking out an app and then it doesn't work, and you go, oh well, you know, whatever. If you're sighted, you just delete the app and you start again. If you're blind, how do you know what's going on? What's happening? You know, and also, where do you turn? How, you know, if you're sitting there with your iPhone and you've got sighted people all around you, and all of a sudden your app stops working, whatever it might be. Say Facebook's got an issue, for example. You know, you say, well, okay, maybe I'll take it into the Apple store, and you show them, you walk up to the guys, the geniuses, and you say, this app doesn't work because it's not working with VoiceOver. And they say, oh, the app does work. It works fine. And you're like, no, it really, really doesn't, because, look, you know, and you show them, and they just look at you like a complete idiot. That's a real problem, you know, let's be honest about it. So, you know, these apps have to be accessible, the systems have to be accessible, all of that, and that's why I always tell people to hold off on updates. Don't do them right away, because they're probably not going to be perfect, and accessibility may fall by the wayside. Sorry.
You are such a pessimist, honestly.
Me? Not at all. Okay, let's talk about macOS High Sierra. Oh dear, can you? Why this name?
Amazing. That was amazing. How can they put that remark in there?
When I fell asleep, guys.
I was actually excited about High Sierra because, to me, that's the same as Leopard to Snow Leopard. And to me, that means that they're going to be focused on stability and fixing bugs and making things a lot better. And that's something that macOS needs desperately, in my opinion. There's so many bugs across the board in Sierra right now. And
absolutely.
They just need to take a breather and catch up on their backlog and fix some of those nasty things that have been plaguing us for years.
Right, okay.
I agree.
Sorry, Hugo, just quickly if I can ask you, Kayaka, when you talk about bugs, are you talking about system-wide bugs, or are you talking about bugs related to VoiceOver?
Yeah, I think a lot of VoiceOver bugs, but there are also some, you know, all user system bugs. I think the file copying was a good example that they demoed. The speed at which Sierra did a copy versus High Sierra. If you do a comparison between some of the backup utilities that you can use to back up your hard drive versus Finder copies, it's like night and day. It's so much legacy stuff going on there that, you know, the Finder, iTunes, you know, all the sort of the WebKit stuff, so many issues in that have been hanging over that they just need to sometimes take a clean break. So I'm hoping to see a lot of good stuff coming out of that for everyone, including us, as far as stability, performance, and maybe we'll get rid of those Safari busy messages that we hear all so much from VoiceOver.
Yeah. Well, you've been going on with them for months, actually. And in fairness, so have I. They really annoy me. Hugo, I cut you off there. You were going to say something.
I was just going to say, for me, it's mainly the VoiceOver stuff that we've been getting with Sierra. Now, I don't get them as much as other friends of mine. Maybe because I don't use the Mac the way they do. It's I guess whatever you do is what you're going to notice. So I don't notice, you know, VoiceOver buffering too much as other people might. But if they can, you know, just do general VoiceOver stuff, that would be fine for me. I mean, I don't do too much productivity stuff. Again, the Mac for me is a toy.
Wow.
Apple will be so pleased to hear that.
Yeah, an expensive toy, let me tell you.
Yes, it is. Kayaker, do you have a computer running Sierra right now?
I do. It's a MacBook Air, I think 2013.
Here's a secret for people that don't know this. Kayaker has like 10 computers in his house, and only one is running Sierra.
At least, yeah.
He runs every version of Mac OS.
I'll tell you one thing, I hate to see his electricity bill, let me tell you that. Julie, are you a Mac user?
No, not at all, no. I've played with the Mac, and I don't know, I'm just so used to JAWS and Windows, I've sort of stuck with it. I just mainly use iPods, iPads, and iOS devices.
Yeah, so you've got a bit of kit there.
For Apple stuff, anyway.
Yeah, you've got a few bits of Apple kit. Okay, all right, complete hypothetical here then, right? So let's just imagine that you were going to go out, and I know that you're not going to go out tomorrow and buy yourself a new Mac.
No.
No. But, you know, let's just imagine for a second that you were going to go there and maybe try one. Watching that event, was there anything that you think stood out for you that said, you know, of all the different functions this system has, and, you know, let's forget about learning voiceover and all the difficulties, was there anything that said, actually, this might be quite good for me?
No. It just, the whole thing just bored me rigid. It really did, because it didn't mean anything to me. I got more excited when I heard about the iPod Home and stuff like that. You know, that excited me more, and iOS 11. That meant more to me. But as far as the Macs go, no, not at all.
Right, okay. All right. Can't sell you on it. Fine. Sean, you're a bit of an in-betweener, aren't you? You kind of jump between Mac and PC.
I am. I would class myself as part-time Mac. I mean, I've got Sierra on at the minute, and there are issues there, and there are some really frustrating things. We'll definitely update. But actually, from what I saw, there was nothing there that made me think, wow, I need that, you know? There was no must-have feature on there.
I know they were talking about memory upgrades and things like that, weren't they? You know?
Yeah, that was the hardware updates from this year.
Yeah.
And that is something that's quite unusual about WWDC this year anyway, because, you know, for the past few years, we haven't seen any new hardware updates. I used to get so annoyed. In fact, I think I threw a tantrum at one point and got in touch with Sean and said, this is an absolute disgrace and an affront to humanity because, you know, I have spent 2 hours sitting on my bottom watching this thing, this guff about software updates. And I wasn't happy at all, quite frankly. So this year, I was very happy to learn that there were new software. And I know, but I was annoyed just at that because I thought, you know, come on. But finally, this year, they did come up with some rather interesting new updates. I want to start with the iMac. So the iMac has been completely refreshed, pretty much. They've put new Kaby Lake processors in there, which doesn't really mean much to me, to be honest. But yeah, they've put these Kaby Lake processors in, which just make them faster, and they've put some more memory in there and all of that, and made more options available. I mean, when I say they've put more memory in, what I mean is that they'll charge you for more memory to go in. But that's part of the joy with Apple. They've also developed this thing called an iMac Pro. And this is quite interesting. Kayaker, I think this is one for you, Hugo as well, because, you know, I'm quite fascinated by this. They've brought out this machine which is really for professionals. It's for the big guys, Disney and Lucasfilm and all that, to go and make, you know, Toy Story 18 or, you know, whatever it is that they are doing at the moment. And, you know, it sounds great and it sounds like a really wonderful piece of kit, but it's £5,000, so it's not for the average consumer on any level. And I just wonder, you know, considering it's an iMac Pro, so it's an all-in-one device, and we've heard so often that developers want kit they can upgrade themselves, they can put a new graphics card into, have Apple really missed the boat on this one? Have they just missed the point entirely?
Nobody wants an all-in-one supercomputer. You know, they're juggling about heat dissipation. It's that what everyone wants who's a power user. And I used to be in that category. I've got Power Mac 8100s all the way up to the last one I got was a cheese grater Power PC G5. But since then, the Power Macs have been horrible. And I just want a box where I can stick stuff in, lots of hard drives, lots of slots, lots of RAM. That's under my control. And unfortunately, that's what I think the pro power user wants. They don't want a closed system where when their hard drive dies, they can't swap it out. They can't quickly swap in more RAM. And unfortunately, with the iMac Pro, I think we've got another closed system with proprietary stuff inside that's going to be hard to upgrade. And that's not what the pro user wants, or at least that's not what I want as a pro type user.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is an impressive piece of kit. I don't want to labour it too much because, you know, this is a show for everybody. It's not just for the geeks. But the novices are welcome, of course. But, you know, it's important that we talk about everything. And, you know, this is a big announcement. You know, it's huge. The iMac Pro, it's a big piece of kit, which, you know, it's $5,000. It's crazy money. But it's important we mention it. I'm quite excited by a lot of the kit in some ways. I mean, you know, a lot of it seems to be going in the right direction. One particular which stands out for me is the iPad Pro. I've been looking for a new iPad, actually, and an excuse to buy one. And I think I may have found my excuse, and that is the iPad Pro 10.5-inch. No mention of what happened to the 12.9. It seems to be there somewhere in amongst it all, but really they were focusing on this new one, which is, you know, it's 10.5-inch, which means it's within the body of a 9.7-inch iPad Pro currently, but the screen has been kind of pushed out, so the bezels are thinner, and it means you know, we can get more screen on there. Guys, I'll throw this to you. What do you think, Kayaka? What was your thoughts on the iPad Pro, the new one?
I think it looks like a great little device. I'm not sure I would want one as a visually impaired blind person because of the screen size, but it looks like a really nice machine. Nice form factor with the pencil and the capabilities, the keyboard stuff. I could easily see it becoming basically a computer plus a tablet device. You might not need a computer if you had that new Pro, iPad Pro. Looks really slick.
Yeah, okay. Julie, what do you think?
I use iPads very rarely. I've got them. I'm more of an iOS user because of the size of the screen. I think the iPhone screen's more friendly to me. But I can see a lot of people going for them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, screen size is really important for a lot of people on this. Hugo, where do you stand?
Well, the new size screen is interesting, but I don't think I'll be upgrading to it. I have a 9.7-inch iPad Pro. So for me, it was just more about them talking about the display, you know, 120 refresh rate. To me, that doesn't mean anything because I don't, you know, I'm blind.
Yeah,
I don't know what.
No, you're being pessimistic.
He said battery smooth when you're moving through it. Okay, means nothing to me.
No.
But I think it's interesting that they brought a 10.5. Yeah, I didn't hear anything about the 9.7 or are they still doing the 12.9 inch, whatever that is. But I'm happy with the iPad I'm using.
Stick it on eBay.
Yeah, they did. But I'm happy with the one I got. I use it again for Netflix video stuff because I live with someone that's low vision, so she can still see some. And it's got the 4 speakers and stuff. I think all that stuff is great. But this one, you know, I'll wait out. I'll wait it out. I'm not excited to go and trade in mine for this one.
Oh. No, I won't.
Come on, Hugo, get it sold.
And I wonder, I wonder whether they're bringing these new iPods out, you know, just for the sake of bringing new iPads out. You know, do they really need to? You know, what's so special about the new one apart from a new screen and stuff?
That's a fair point, actually. You know, there is a point where, I mean, you look at the iPad sales over the past few years, they've been down. So, yeah, I mean, it's not, it doesn't look that bright a future for them. So bringing out these new form factors might help. It might just be grabbing in the dark.
I think as a machine, it looks really good.
Sean,
yeah, really fast, nice screen. It's, battery life is amazing. But there just isn't enough difference between the iPad and the iPhone for me to warrant spending that extra cash. You know what me and cash, it takes a lot for me to actually spend that money. So I want to know there's a big difference. It's just a bigger screen. As much as I like the iPad, I had a iPad third gen. It was great for a bit of Netflix. If you've got a little bit of vision, it's great for that. But it is just exactly the same as your iPhone, basically. So I couldn't justify it. I wouldn't buy another one until there's a big difference in iOS on the iPad and iOS on the iPhone.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
In the blind,
no, on you go.
Sorry, in the blind community, I would agree with that. The SE screen, why do people buy large screens? If you don't have any vision, you know, the screen is a price point, and get the small screen you can because it runs the exact same operating system, same apps. And I always recommend that to anyone who's visually impaired if they are totally blind and get the one that's a small screen because it can fit in your pocket.
Yeah, I mean, the iPhone SE is very popular among blind people, that's for sure. I do want to talk a little bit about sales figures for a minute. Generally, quite a boring topic, I know. But actually, you know, when you look at the trends at the moment, they are quite interesting. So let's look at the iPad. I mean, I mentioned earlier about the iPad sales and how they are getting lower and, you know, not as many people buying them, it seems. And that trend seems to be continuing. Maybe the new form factors, as I said earlier, will make a difference to that. Who knows? But at the moment, the sales figures are going down. But what's perhaps more interesting is the type of phones, smartphones, that are doing really well. And that is the larger smartphones, the larger, the 5.8-inch type phones. They are doing really, really well in sales. Used to be called phablets, if you remember, phone and tablet combined. People seem to be settling into that kind of world, and that's quite interesting. I've got the iPhone 7 Plus, and I chose it because I thought, well, I might need a larger screen because I've got a little bit of useful vision, and there are days where I can read the screen relatively well, and other days I can't, so I like having the option. Although, actually, it's interesting. You put them side by side, and I think when you use the zoomed feature on the iPhone 7 and on the iPhone 7 Plus, it's exactly the same. So, you know, it doesn't really make any difference, I guess. But, you know, there is so much choice out there, but it seems that people are going for that type of phone, and that is really, really interesting. The iPad Pro 10.5 inch is going to be out soon, though, and we are quite excited about it. I'm certainly keen because I think for me, you know, using it for creativity tasks, audio recording, all that could be good. It's going to be out the end of the year, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, it is the end of the year. Yeah, but like you, Stephen, I'm happy with a smaller screen. You know, that suits me fine, so I'm not going to change phones either, you know, because I don't want a bigger phone.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the iPhone SE is a great phone. It's almost the ultimate phone for blind people, isn't it? I mean, you think about the screen size and its capability. Okay, let's talk a little bit about this. The processors have been upgraded to Kaby Lake. I don't really know what that means. In fact, you know, Kaby Lake, it sounds like a great place to go on holiday, doesn't it? It sounds like a nice little part of the world. Kaby Lake processors are now in some of the new MacBooks and Mac Pros, iMacs as well. Kayaka, what does that mean in words we can understand?
Faster and less power.
Right, so it's like me going out running then.
Yes, yes. You know, these chip cycles, they're always trying to make them a little bit faster and use less energy for longer battery life, and that's the holy grail. So they do that by reducing the size over time and improving the instruction sets, but that's generally what's happened. And Intel's been slow with their updates, and I suspect that Apple would have liked to announce that when they announced it with the touch bars, but the processors weren't ready now. So that's why I think we heard them at WWDC, because they're finally ready and they're putting them in all the product lines.
Okay, all right.
So it means you'll get more battery power.
But it gets to a point, though, where you think, have I got enough power in my device? You know, I mean, surely there is a limit to how much power you actually need. I mean, I think about some of the earlier product lines from Apple. I mean, I've got a MacBook Pro. It's 2015. It's fast. It runs really well. It's more than capable. It's 2 years old. You know, but I don't know. I mean, I must admit, I did try out the new Apple MacBook with Touch Bar. In fact, I text Sean right afterwards, and I said, hey, Sean, this is absolutely fantastic.
You did.
He did.
Yeah, I did. I absolutely loved it.
I talked him down.
Well, you did. Yes, you had to do a bit of talking down on that one because, you know, the price was like 1,700 quid or something. And in fairness, my wife would have done the same kind of talking down and dressing down as well. But, you know, that is the question. You know, is there just, are we at a point where our machines are just powerful enough, Kayaka? We don't need any more power added into our machines. I mean, it's just crazy.
You're wrong.
Oh, right,
yes.
Okay.
He's wrong.
No, you're not, actually. I think that's true. The applications haven't kept up with the power of the chips, and you know, you can do just about everything on an entry level laptop these days from Intel or from Apple, and the new MacBooks, you know, these speed bumps, usually the main increase is battery, but there haven't been a lot of apps that have needed that much power unless you're in the game world, and unfortunately that usually depends more on the graphics card and really doesn't apply to us because we don't care how many frames per second, you know, our virtual reality game is going through. So I think that, you know, the cheapest computer that Apple sells is going to do you quite well for quite some time. And I always recommend the Airs because you're not paying for the Retina screen, and they're very small form factor and great. I love the Airs. My favorite computer is my 11-inch Air.
Yeah, Sean likes it because it's cheap.
It is, because it's the cheapest way to get in.
But you know what they didn't mention in their MacBook introduction, since you brought it up, was the little touch bar. Not one word on, you know, the touch bar. So I think the reception for the touch bar hasn't been that great.
No, you're right. Okay, well, I think it's time to move on to the main event. There was one piece of kit that was talked about that we must refer to. And if you ever wonder what happened to the old Mac Pros, the cylindrical devices that were the Mac Pros, well, basically they've been turned into HomePods. The idea being...
I like it.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I'm just saying it's what they've done with the old Mac Pros. They've turned them in from waste paper bins to speakers. And that was an interesting idea, certainly. I'm keen to know your thoughts on this. I mean, obviously, we haven't heard it yet, but it's being sold to us as a speaker that is going to be amazing for music. It is going to be great. It's going to have Siri on it. We'll be able to talk to it like we can with our Echo and our Google Home. I'm keen to know what you guys think.
It's supposed to be able to access your music library via the cloud, and you're supposed to be able to speak to it, and a bit like the Echo and Google Home. So it's wireless based again. I think they said it's quite a compact speaker. I mean, visually, I don't know. I haven't got a clue what it looks like, but.
Well, 7 inches tall.
It sounds as 7 inches tall. Yeah. Okay.
It looked like a marshmallow.
It does. Actually, that's a really good point. It does look like a marshmallow. But it's got some nice functions to it. It's got, obviously, Siri built into it. It's got Apple Music, and you can listen to all the tunes from that. It's got all kinds of other functions to it, like the weather and reminders. I like the fact you can do texts from it as well. So you could say, like, send a message to Sean saying, I love the Apple HomePod, or whatever. You know, that would be... quite good to have, actually. Some nice little functions in there. Hugo, what do you think?
I like the description they gave about, I don't know how many drivers it has and that motor for good bass. So it sounds to me like they, was it audio beam, spatial awareness, and it probably has these microphone arrays just like the Echo where it can hear you all the way from across the room. So that was great. But it's got HomeKit capabilities built into it. So you could say, you know, turn off the bedroom light or open the garage door or whatever. And you can also control this remotely. So anything you want to do remote, like, I don't know, what, sound the alarm so nobody comes near my house? I don't know, turn on the camera? I don't know. But you can do it remotely. I think that was pretty cool. The rumors had said that this speaker might have a screen. It doesn't, from what I heard. Nobody said it had a screen, so they were wrong on that.
Yeah, it's not a screen, is it? I don't know what it is. There's something on the top of it, like it lights up or what?
Just probably like the Echo, you know, where at the top when you say, you know, computer or whatever, it lets you know with lights that it's listening to you. Isn't that right, Kayaker?
Yes, there's a row of LEDs on the Amazon devices that will display if you can see them. Red if it's blocked, I think, and blue if it's listening to you.
Okay. Right, Sean, what do you think then? I'm intrigued to know.
Here we go. Okay. This was the highlight for me, one of these. And I don't know. I'm just not sure about this one because it all depends on the sound quality. It came in at $350, which is actually a better price than I thought it was going to be. When they started going in about the speakers and there were 7 tweeters and a 4-inch bass, and I thought, okay, we're going to be looking at $600, $700 here.
Yeah.
But $350, still too much for me. But if the sound quality is up there with a Sonos or a Bose, you know, these high-end speakers, which do cost that sort of money, then I think it's going to be really interesting.
But it all comes down to how it sounds. The Siri implementation and actually what it can do is all sort of secondary almost, because for that sort of money, it better sound good. It better not sound like my Amazon Dot.
Oh, right. okay. I thought the Amazon Echo was okay, if I'm honest. You know, the big one is good, I think. It's the Dot that's...
I think it sounds good.
Yeah, the Dot's not maybe the greatest in the world, but... yeah, I mean...
Ridiculous.
No, it's not ridiculous. It makes perfect sense. But, you know, the point is that this technology is moving at a pace, and with this HomePod device, I mean, it sounds good and it sounds feasible and all of that. It's got some lovely functions to it. You know, you can listen to lots of music on it, and music is certainly the one thing they're pushing at the moment. Music, music, music. You can do other things on it. You can search for the weather, and you can, you know, activate your HomeKit devices like smart plugs and smart lights and all of that if you want to do stuff like that. That's all great. But I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a lot of money to spend. $350. You know, I spent $500 on my Sonos, and I spent £50 on a Dot. Stick them together, and I've got an amazing system. It's going to have to go some way to beat that. I guess my point is it just the case that Apple are late to the party?
Oh, they absolutely are. This product is a direct result to Amazon Echo and the Google Home introductions. This is Apple's Home Assistant. And the reason you didn't have any search capabilities is because you really can't do those on the Google Homes and the Amazon devices. You know, if you listen to the commands that they gave, it was practically the same vocabulary that they used for the Amazon. You know, set a timer, you know, remind me of this, you know, do certain things. But since there's no screen, you really can't do complicated searches, because the only feedback that you're going to get is going to be audio feedback, which is great for us. I love screenless devices.
Yeah, so do I. I think they're fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good thing. So Apple is definitely late to the you know, automated assistant party. They've got a lot of catch up to do with the Amazon stuff.
Well, they really do. I mean, there's so much technology still to come out from this. I mean, we're at very early days, let's be honest. You know, this is going to take some time to build up. The question is, though, being late to the party and all of that, you know, the question is, would any of us actually buy one of these things?
I personally don't think I would at this point. I'd rather buy 7 Dots and pair them up with very good speakers that are go beyond what Apple's providing. It's cheaper to do it that way. And I like the Amazon ecosystem right now for their voice assistant. It's great for ordering stuff. If I run out of Tide Pods, it's, you know, Amazon, order me some Tide Pods, and boom, it'll be here in 2 days with Prime. So I've gotten used to doing a lot of neat things with my Amazon devices, and Apple doesn't have that shopping capability built in. But we'll see where their voice technology goes. We'll see how advanced Siri gets. I think that there's room to improve. There are things I don't like about the Amazon and the Google Home interfaces. And, you know, this is the battle of Siri and Google and Alexa.
I think sometimes when you're speaking with Siri, it gets things wrong. So for me, it would have to drastically improve to be able to work with this speaker. But I think, to reiterate what Sean said, I think sound is a very important factor for me. It would have to be wow for me to buy it.
Yeah. You know what? Buy a Dot, buy a Sonos, stick them together, and save yourself a fortune. Simple as that. Well, actually, you'll probably end up spending a fortune to do all that, actually. Okay, let's go back to the very beginning, because earlier on I asked each of you what your standout thoughts were, our standout moments were from WWDC this year, and you all came up with various things. Kayaker, you came up with virtual reality and augmented reality, and I wanted to talk a bit more about that before we go, because I think it would help people to understand more about it. But this really was something for you, at least, that stood out. I must admit, I was quite surprised when I heard you talk about it.
Yeah, this is exactly what I was hoping to hear out of the keynote, and because... And I got so excited as soon as you said this VR stuff, and they're talking about, you know, the vision capabilities to be able to recognize objects. And I got real excited when they said, you know, we recognize planes like tabletops and walls and things like that. And in my head, I'm just bouncing around like, okay, this is awesome, because we can tie this into their APIs and get sort of visual mappings of rooms. And, you know, there's going to be apps that'll be coming out there that'll allow you to, you know, get a lay of the land or a descriptive lay of the land of interior spaces and complex outdoor spaces or malls or stores that, you know, there's a lot of potential there, and it's really exciting. For me, you know, Google Maps and Apple Maps and all the navigation systems, they're great to get you to within, you know, 10 meters of your final destination, but to find that door, to find the stairs, to find that last little bit, I'm hoping that this API will provide the tools to build the apps that'll solve that last little bit of problem for us.
Okay. You know, I've got to say, I'm a bit thick when it comes to all this kind of stuff. You know, could you explain to me what the differences are between virtual reality and augmented reality? Because I just can't figure it out, to be honest.
I think augmented reality is overlaying information or computer-generated objects over the view of what you see through your camera. So if you're looking at a picture that's real, like you're pointing stuff in the crowd, and all of a sudden, you know, you get a little circle around a face that says, you know, celebrity here, you know, take a look at this person, you know, that's augmented reality. Whereas virtual reality is totally fake. You're sort of putting something over your eyes or you're being immersed in something that's completely machine made, you know, a Star Wars planet or, you know, some video game type of situation.
Right. Okay. All right.
But some of the technology is similar.
Okay. Okay. Hugo, what about you? Where do you stand with all of this?
You know, I was getting pretty excited when I heard the demo when they were talking about the TIE fighter, they're going to have a flyover. But then I realized, this sounds all great, but I can't see.
Once you realize that, Hugo.
No.
Oh, don't spoil it for the rest of us, Hugo. Come on.
Didn't do anything for me either.
I mean, you know, I've got a little bit of useful vision to try this kind of stuff out. Well, actually, I prefer to call what I've got left useless vision.
Yes.
It's a bit more appropriate, I think. But, you know, it's very difficult for me to sort of process fast-moving video and you know, try and make some kind of sense out of all of what I'm seeing. You know, I was just thinking, actually, what Apple should do is they should build me a new brain.
Insane.
We'll get you a Cavi Lake.
Yeah, get a Cavi Lake processor brain. Sean, what did you think about the VR and AR? Did it excite you in any way?
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. Again, one of the highlights with the APIs they're making available. So for anyone that doesn't know, an API basically means it gives the developer, someone writing an app, the ability just instead of writing the code from scratch, they can reach into Apple's library and say, okay, I want you to look, use the camera and tell me what objects you can find there. And then it will give you that information back. So it makes it so much easier for developers. And they're given, like Kayaker said, the using augmented reality APIs, they can identify objects and, was interesting to me, landmarks and, you know, surfaces. So they're just what the apps that could come from this look really exciting. The augmented reality where they were looking at a tabletop and putting coffee cups on it, virtual coffee cups, and a whole game and a city appeared on it. Again, we're thinking visually, well, what's the point of that for us? But the thing is that the using just a camera, Google have had Tango for a long time, which is a way of 3D mapping a room, but it uses four different cameras. You need special hardware. They were doing the same thing virtually, just using a standard iPhone camera. They were able to tell that's a tabletop flat surface that's horizontal. They could find the edges of it. So just the ability to look around a room and identify certain surfaces, really exciting stuff, I think.
Yeah. I want to just ask you one more question and go around the table on this one. Do you guys think that Apple are still innovating? That's quite a big question, I know. Kayaker, I'll come to you first.
I think the answer is yes, but I think in today's day and age, the innovation is harder to see. You're not going to get a lot of you know, new products because, as you said, it's like we've reached the power of the processor. Their innovation is sort of much more subtler. You're seeing it in the APIs that they're coming out. You're seeing it in better integrations. But, you know, the App Store is still the App Store. You know, you're still buying apps there. That's not going to change that much. You can call it innovation. It's not. It's just, to me, that's just fluff. but the APIs that are coming out, you know, the technology to get things done faster and expose these two hooks to developers is really exciting to me. But I understand that won't excite everyone.
Okay. Hugo?
Well, maybe there's still some innovation to be done. You got to remember how Apple does things. You know, they're not the first ones to the game on anything. They watch and observe how companies are doing things, and then they'll take something, and then they'll improve it, and they'll come out with something that does it just a little bit better. So I think they still are.
Okay, all right. Julie, where do you stand?
I think Apple have made huge strides with accessibility. I think if they continue to improve things with VoiceOver, that'd be absolutely brilliant. I like the Braille support. I think the HomePad, or the HomePod, is nothing new, because we've seen Amazon Echo and we've seen Google, but I think interesting nonetheless, you know. But I think that there was nothing that really sort of wowed me this year.
Well, I think Apple is still doing what they were doing all the way through. I just think that other companies are catching up and doing a whole lot better. Microsoft doing some amazing hardware now, Amazon doing amazing services and some devices as well. I think other companies are just catching up, and I think the margin between them is getting smaller and smaller. But Apple is still doing good stuff. I worry about their price point. I think they're losing touch. $5,000 for the iMac Pro as a starting price, that's a lot of money. I think they got to watch that.
Yeah, and budget iPods, you know, a budget iPad, £300 or £400. I mean, that's not budget, is it?
It is for Apple.
Well, yeah, indeed. Well, that's it for our hour. We've run out of time. And, you know, they said we could never talk about WWDC for a whole hour. Well, we did. Listen, guys, thank you so much for being part of the program this week. It's been really interesting to talk through all of these announcements. I'm so glad we were able to get through all. And we've all managed to stay friends by the end of it as well, which is fantastic. So thank you so much for being here. Remember that you can listen to the show online. And you can also check us all out on Twitter as well. I'm at Tech Talker Steve. Sean is at The Blurred Nerd. And you can get in touch with the other guys online as well through Twitter. That is it for our show. Do, as I say, check us out online and keep in touch as well on email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Bye.